Welcome to the Flying Solo Podcast. I am your host, Katie Kangas, and each week on the show, we will talk about how to take flight and follow your dreams as a solopreneur architect. Darwin Fortuna spent years as an ugly duckling, searching for a place to belong in other firms. His search ended when he founded his own firm, Flow Design. Now, he defines his own flow as a fully fledged swan. He leads a small practice full of formerly ugly ducklings looking for space to spread their wings. As a bevy of swans, each team member is empowered to lead their projects, taking a turn at the head of the wedge. In this episode, we dive into the culture and client systems of Flow Design. These systems help each team member spread their wings and flow through projects as gracefully as swans. Darwin Fortuna, you caught my eye because you won the AIA Young Architect Award in 2024. And what you're doing with Flow Design seemed to be a very unique way to be building your team and building a way that you're serving your clients very seamlessly in your practice.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I'm glad that those little things caught your attention. And we're going to dig deeper into that. I think everybody and the AIA for selecting me for that award. A lot has come out of that. So I encourage others to apply whenever they can for that and any award that they can actually apply for, because it creates an impact, a ripple effect throughout. So yeah, and thank you, and I'm glad to meet you and connect with you.
So tell me a little bit about Flow Design Studio, when you started it, and what kind of was the impetus to getting it going?
So I met my business partner, Marco Severino, back in the Dominican Republic in 2008 or so. Nothing happened there. We just met, saw him at school, pretty bright kid. Suddenly moved to the States. I didn't know where. So then I moved about 2 years after to the States also. And I see on Facebook suggestions that Marcos actually moved to Massachusetts, and I moved to Massachusetts. So we decided that we will connect. And to make the long story short, we both had to work and study, because this is the motto of the BAC, you work and study. And we were a bit frustrated with the work environment to some degree. I would catalog him and myself as the kind of people you want to have around you. Any company would benefit very much from having them, you know, in whichever role, right, whichever degree. But there was frustration. I have to be careful how I say it, because I don't want to denigrate anybody, but I just didn't want to be anybody else's tool, right? To some extent, I felt like my talents and skills were not really utilized to the best of their ability. And the way that things were structured. So I jumped around a lot. And I often say that I was a job whore, because I would jump around from one place to the other trying to find my place. And from the small meeting and large offices, I realized that they all were lacking that diversity, but also like that feeling of belonging. The voices and the big firms would disappear within the echo of the other people, right? So it was difficult. And then on the smaller ones, everybody was trying to fight for the same position. So it was also difficult. So things were a little bit frustrating, and I think that the last thing that kind of dropped it for me, I was just starting to not like the profession. Like, I was starting to not have passion for it, and other people around me also were feeling the same way. One of my coworkers, who at that time, who actually is the director of design here at Flow, literally said, "I feel like the fire is dying. Like, the fire for the profession is just dying." So he dropped out of the profession altogether for a little bit. And I say, hey, listen, we got to do this thing called Flow, which we spoke about all the way back in 2014. We should probably try to make it really, you know, take a serious step forward towards it. And we looked at other people's failures, and like meaning companies that actually should fail, that weren't failing. I was like, if they're not failing, I think we can also make it. You know, if anything, we'll probably answer the phone faster, and we'll probably be there faster, and we'll probably, you know, do as much work or more than anybody else, because as a Latino, we work hard. And actually, it was founded out of Latinos, like, you know, Mexico, the Dominican Republic. So we thought, well, if anything, we'll work our way through it. The work ethic would have been the problem. And we love design and architecture, so we thought that was going to happen. And that was that early stage. We incorporated Flow 2017. And that's, it was with the first deposit from Greg Carell that we incorporated the company, literally right away. And then I passed all my exams within a year from that time. So then the whole thing changed. I called the board and I said, can I now change the name everywhere? Because I was following the rules. You can't not call yourself an architect. And I tell everybody that. If you're not licensed, you cannot call yourself an architect. So we changed everything around. Julio was doing another office and us. And then eventually just moved fully to Flow. And then Marcos in 2019 moved fully to Flow. So and now every time he says, I should have done it long ago before that. But it's the fear of whether this is going to work out or not, right? Like, let's make sure I pay all my bills before I move to that office. And we grew from there. The mentality has shifted over time. But they're like the core values that didn't have a name back then now do have names.
One question, the three words that describe your firm's unique approach.
I would say we're very strategic as a company, like very, very strategic. We're very humble, no matter what. You know, we listen to everybody. We're very, very humble. Literally, anybody calls, we treat them like they're a client. And it could just be a call selling or something. So we're very humble about anything. I don't know. I guess I want to use the word empower, but we do empower people. Like, it's not that we are empowered, but we like to delegate that empowerment. So it's like always passing the baton, you know, like we really like doing that. So I guess those three words are pretty good.
I like that.
We care about inclusion, diversity, equity. We care about everybody having their own voice, being their own pencil, right? Their own architect of their own destiny. And that still resonates with us today, and it's part of our mission of increasing, actually, diversity so that those that probably feel like misfits elsewhere can find a place for themselves. So we don't see ourselves as competitors of anybody because we see, like, anyone that has ever worked at Flow is an offspring of this movement and this legacy. So that's actually one of the things you mentioned offline, that we do keep our alumni on our website, not only of staff members that have been with us, but also consultants that have worked with us. At some point, we forgot to change it. And then at another point, I looked at it and I was like, whoa, where else am I tracking who has ever worked at Flow? So it's like, let's leave it there. Let's just put it right there, you know, and eventually we'll have a, you know, year graduating period, you know. But also we don't burn bridges, right? Anybody that has worked here generally has done a good job, and they have shaped who we are. So it's like it's part of our history, and we're very proud of that. A lot of them, it was their first job in the profession too, that first opportunity. You know, as Flow has been growing and morphing, like, we're very, like, employee-centered, you know. What they care about is what we care about. When we were going to promote something, even, like, where we're going to do our summer outing or what benefits should we have at the office, we do a poll and say, what benefits do you think we should have? You know, some people jump with some random things, like, we need a bigger fridge, and we get a bigger fridge. You know, it's like, okay, that's not a benefit, but we'll do that. And that's how the office has been kind of, like, morphing. More and more, some things that we disliked from the corporate architectural world, we actually try to implement also, because when you're young and you're a disruptor because you don't understand the pre-existing environment, you sometimes kill it all, like the good, the bad, and the ugly. And you're like, well, wait a minute, there were some really good things that we should probably preserve. And now those things, we're learning that now as, like, principals, me and Marcos, like, detaching ourselves from the work a little bit more. You know, no calls after 6 p.m. unless if it's 911, call 911, you know. And more for the partners, for me and Marcos, because the rest of the office doesn't work past 5:30. Nobody works past 5:30. Nobody works Saturdays and Sundays either. Never. They don't do that. So that's never been the case here.
And was that something you encountered in former firms?
Oh, yeah. It was like the norm to work late hours. I was at one of the bigger firms in Boston, and like at 1 a.m. there was people there with some beer waiting for some renderings from China that would be coming in, right? Like, oh, for a presentation the next day. And you're like, what? I was a student at that time, so that was kind of cool, whatever. We do whatever anytime. So it was okay. But I, in hindsight now, that's horrible. Nobody should ever do that, right? Like, that should not even, you know, there is a period of time, there is a period of hours, there's, you know, and that's how, what I tell to everybody. Like, we enforce our timelines and our deadlines, but I tell them, you come first. So if I have to apologize to the client later, that's okay. But you as an individual come first. So if you don't feel well, let me know. Don't push yourself too hard. And we'll call the client. It's going to be okay. It's never really as fast as they need it. You know, it's like, we understand there's wiggle room for all of these things. And if it is that bad that they needed it that quick, then we're really not a good fit. So we might as well stop it. You know, it's like, it's not. It means that they did poor planning on the very beginning. You know, so we don't want to inherit those problems. So we've been very smart on, you know, keeping our staff. We're very proud now that finally, like, people aren't really leaving the office because they needed another job or they wanted more money or they wanted to go to a warmer weather. We can't bring Miami weather here, although they want this weather now, today, actually, sadly. But it's like, you know, but now we have a team that we're like, we hit the sweet spot, you know. And there was a shift on the mentality of who we hired. It's no longer like who we can afford. It's who will get us to be able to afford them too. So because they will get us to that level with the things that they bring to the table, and you know, and we've been making it. They've pushed us. We've pushed them, the staff members, and we've been very, very proud. Now we have two offices, so this is pretty fun. We have another one in the Dominican Republic, which was born out of that necessity of also increasing that diversity and opportunities in places that architects are quitting altogether. Like, if you think it's bad in the United States, think on all those other places where anyone with Revit and CAD think that they can do the job, right? Like, you're competing with everybody, and there is no laws and regulations that would stop them. So the jobs die, you know? So we open a shop there, and it's thriving. We have 3 staff members right now, and it's so fun. It's so fun, you know? I think we hit the ceiling with the growth. We don't want to grow anymore. We're happy with where we're at right now.
Is there a sweet spot? Where is that sweet spot for you?
So we evaluate that as we go, but it's always been about 12 people for 2 principals. We are about like 15-ish, I would say, but it's like 12 people, 12, 13 people, I think. Now that changes because as others are growing, they're now able to write contracts, proposals, negotiate, right? So it's because how much can I manage? So if they're very good at self-managing, which is a part of flow, by the way, everybody, I just got an email, I think it was on Friday, of one of the staff members. He didn't feel well at that time. And he's like, oh, I'm sick. I'm going to take the day off. And I'm like, sure. And he's like, but I feel like I have a good handle on everything. And he said, and I feel like flow operates like a attorney's office. Everybody has their own case. And we litigate with each other as needed. Like, we meet with each other and consult with each other as needed, but everybody has their own case. So, and I guess it is like that because I don't want to just, like, dictate anything for anybody. We've created a process. We're very proud of, like, the process that we have. That's why we were able to scale to another country in another office in a very sustainable manner. Because we have a training in place, videos in place, they watch them, and they're able to be billable since, like, they won. The first 4 hours of the day, they just learn, and the other 4 hours of the day on Monday, they do they start working on a project. So that's, and that's the best approach. You can't just babysit everybody, you know, you got to let them swim, you know. So that's that.
Yeah. So traditional firms are often described as triangles with the principals at the top of the hill and then a few below them and a few more and a few more. I've encountered some firms like you're describing where it's more of a circle where there's a bunch of principals leading and then there's people who are still developing or resource folks who the projects are more of a network or a matrix as you're kind of collaborating sometimes. But you're all sharing those same interns and people who are learning or specifiers or other consultants are inside that circle. And everyone is equipped to be the start of that project and to reach out to clients. And so that almost sounds like what you're starting to build. That firm is 40 years old, I think, here in Minnesota. So it's interesting to hear about it at the start. But they've stayed around that 12-person size as well. So I wonder if there's that sweet spot.
Yeah, over time that shifts, but I have my own personal ambitions, and Marcos has his own personal ambitions, which may trump some of the. But we always look at what's best for the office. Like, what's best for the office? Like, me, I wish we were hundreds of people. Why? Because I do want to say that we did it. You know, it's like, we did it. You know, it's like, we're the new Moody Nolan, a big minority office. Like, we did it, you know. And that we did it actually amplifies by the we did it of all of the people within the office, right? Like, the echo of the fact that we've done towers now. We're working on Abu Dhabi buildings, like in Dubai or whatever, you know. So it's, like, really cool stuff that we want to be able to tell or folks at our, you know, Thanksgiving table, like, yeah, we're working on this, you know. So it's, although every project has his own charm and story, but that's the sweet spot. And then I hadn't thought of it as a circle, but it is kind of like that, you know. Me and Marcos have just decided to be the ones that make it rain when it comes to like acquisition of projects. The negotiation just really requires someone that has seen as much of it all as possible. Because, you know, we're literally, you protect and mitigate issues at the negotiation, at the first initial interaction with somebody. And someone without experience, unfortunately, that you can't just transfer that. You know, I want to be able to say, yeah, it just takes time. You know, it's intuition, it's a percentage of that. It's I've seen this kind of before, but maybe it's not, you know. Let's just, you know, pass the sniff test on this and whether we should go forward with it or not. So that takes time. And we're early now thinking of succession plan and retirement plan because, you know, you can't be thinking of that when your kidneys are about to fail. Like, come on. You have to be able to think of that now. You know, we're in our 30s and we're like, okay, we got to find someone 5 to 10 years younger that can take over, right? And what's that going to be like? And that's what I mean about our office. We're very savvy, financially savvy. We listen a lot to a lot of people. Like, even our clients have a lot of knowledge from different perspectives. And we pick it up, we digest it, and we try to disseminate it within the office. Like, hey, for the future, think of this. But we walk the walk and talk the talk. Like, we can't just tell somebody to do something and then not do it. You know, it's like, we also do it. So that's and we want everybody to be successful. And that may mean, sadly, that may mean, to some extent, sadly, because some people may be happy doing what they're doing, right? And that's okay. I mean, if you're the best Revit modeler, you might as well, you know, that's it, right? We do think that there is other superpowers that people can develop, and we try to push them in that direction. But we can't force anybody to do anything, right? So, you know, I'm tough on certain things. One thing I'm tough on, and everybody knows it, billing and invoicing. Super tough. I think a lot of clients don't like me because of that. I am very, very, very tough. You know, people hear me here in the tough conversation over the phone because it's an open concept office. And I'm like, just take note, guys. Just take note. That's oxygen to our office. So how hard would you fight if you were drowning underwater? You would fight really hard. So with finances, I fight just like if I was taking air. I guess I'm taking that from Eric Thomas, E.T. So, you know, as bad as you want to breathe, you got to collect. You know, so that's that, you know.
I hadn't heard that phrase. That's very true. It's the fuel to your plane. Question for you. You described a great culture of caring for each other in your office. Are you modeling that so that that's the relationship that everyone has with the clients, being very proactive and showing clients that you're listening and their input is shaping the designs?
Yeah, so that's embedded into our process. So that said, I got to talk about our process. So we have a four-step process. So step zero is initial consultation, which we charge. Nothing is free. That's another thing, too. We never talk to a client for free. When it's like 10 minutes over the phone, I say, we might as well schedule a consultation. It's $100, depending on the distance, and let's talk more about it. Because I just don't like giving value away. I really don't. You know, and if I'm going to give it away to someone that I don't know and that probably won't turn into a project, I might as well give it to my kids and talk to them more, right? That's time that I want to keep. So we do that. After they agree to the initial consultation, I go there. I typically actually record it with my phone. I have one business phone, one personal phone. So he said, okay, if I record everything, and literally grab my phone, put it right here, try to, like, don't worry about it. It's just for me. It goes to the listening part that you mentioned. After I do 5 consultations, I won't remember who cared much about the pink color versus who cared much about the waterfall feature. Like, I won't remember that. But when I come back to the office to write the contract, and when I'm training someone to write a contract, they can watch it and listen and look at. And I do it on purpose. I'm very strategic with the questions I ask during the consultation so that the person that may not be me, that may be writing this contract, knows that's what they care about, that's what's going on. So after that, we write the contract, we send it over. We need 2 requirements met prior to starting any design services. Contract signed, deposit pay, period. That's it. If that doesn't happen, that's it. I've learned that a lot of people will either sign the contract, never provide the deposit, and those are both problems. If they provide a deposit and then sign the contract, there's really not an agreement yet. You just completed 1 step, and it's happened that there's issues down the line because they never even read the contract. And I proceeded because I saw the payment, but you learn as you go. You're like, whoa. The contract is literally the rules of the game. That's the game I set out to play. If you're not going to play that game, we might as well stop now because we're not on the same. Or maybe we can tweak it. Maybe there's something you can teach me that I didn't know. And I'm willing to take, you know, like our contracts are pretty straightforward. We have 2 types, 1 small one, 1 a little bit bigger one. So that's it. Everybody here knows that they shouldn't start anything until they see that. They don't even get assigned a project until it's signed and the deposit's paid. And they have a checklist that says, step 1, sign contract and deposit fulfilled. And they say, Darwin, has the deposit been paid? Yes. Thank you. And I say, thank you for taking care of our money. Like, thank you for taking care of flow, because it means you care, right? So we are urged to design always and provide a lot of stuff since school, which is a problem. But we don't do that here. Then we start with step 1. We call that define. And the define is essentially a site analysis of what the state of the union is. What do we all know to be true right now? It's really a hypothesis. So this is the lot. Do we have a survey? Yes. Do we do existing conditions? Yes. Once that's done, we compile all of that and send it as a backend and say, this is what we all understand to be true. Is that generally correct? If not, provide feedback. If yes, sign and approve. Because if the conditions change, then everything changes. But they typically sign it and approve it. That's part of our template, which is a Google slide that every project has. So they have it already as a Google slide. And then we move to step 2. Step 2, we call it envision. So envision is where everything that they thought they wanted, that they told me, that's consistent with the initial consultation information, which is already embedded into our contract, is a little bit more detailed. Because I can't just write a long contract with all the things that they told me they wanted. But if generally scope-wise is in alignment, the staff members and myself, because I do projects too, we look at the contract and we look at the envision. And we're like, okay. So they provide a little envision. We have a template for it so that everybody gives it to us the same way. It's images and words. Photos are worth 1,000 words, right? So that helps. And we all visual. I also want all of the items that they must have. What will make this a success? I also call it a target. I know it has a negative connotation, but really, I don't like to shoot a moving target. I really don't. So, and I hated that about all the firms, that it looked like you were never done. Like, when are you done? Well, you never really prescribed what being done meant. So if you never prescribed it, you're never going to be done, and the budget's going to be burned. I mean, there's like 3 ways of burning a budget. It's either the client generating a bunch of changes, or you because you want to play a lot. And the third one is conditions that happen, right? Things that happen. It's different. So all of them need to be justified. And we sometimes do more work because we want to. Like, okay, that's not even for the client. I think this is a great entry for competition. Move it forward that direction. Never show it to the client. And here, and do a permit set for that. So that's it. You know, and I guess I'm getting ahead of myself. Once we get the envision package, we also generate a twin of that with what we believe goes along with it. Because they may not know what they want means. So we look for images, put it all together, and say, we also suggest this. And send it back and say, is this true? Sign it. And they provide a signature. If they don't like it, then they change it. But that target is set, it's frozen. That Google slide's locked at that point. No more. Because if they tomorrow wake up that they came from France and thought that something was cool, that probably is a change order. So I don't want, if we haven't started designing, that probably is a change order. If we started. So then we move to step three, design options. We only show two. The entire office fought for how many options we should actually include in our base contract. Our director of design said one. Because we know what's the best. And I was like, no, we should give them exactly what they asked for. And yes, do the other option on steroids of what you think it should be best for them. So that way we show them that we listen, but that we also reinterpreted what we listened in another way. Because they may be called violations, issues, zoning requirements that they don't even know. And we don't give options that don't work. When they ask, have you tried this? We show them then the stash of 10 options that we did before and show them, yeah, we did try. Some people want to challenge us sometimes, but we show that.
I can't tell you how many times clients have said, oh, I never thought of it that way. It's like, mm-hmm. This is the power of design and having a second pair of eyes. And sometimes the result is whatever they predetermined before I came in, because they live in the home. They have a vision, and as we test out other options, yeah, it's clearly that's what they want. But there's a lot of other times that testing those waters with them and showing them what's possible, because they don't know what's behind walls. There's so many things that we're willing to question that a lot of people will just take for granted as rote. You mm-hmm. can't touch that. You can't do that. And so I totally understand.
And I love, because we do a lot of residential. It's about 60% of our work is one and two family. They always talk to me on the initial consultation based on what they have. So, like, the truth in the reality is so strong and predominant that they cannot see what it could be. So it's always like, oh, I think this got to go here, and this bedroom's got to go there. And I'm like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then, after a while, I said, listen, I'm much more like, I guess my name Darwin comes from Charles Darwin. I'm going to test all of these ideas. Right now I'm listening, but I'm not, sometimes in the initial consultation they think I'm part of the AGTV show and move that wall there and move this piece here. And, it's like, no. That's not how it's going to be. I'm going to listen and then I'll tell you what I think afterwards. So you'll tell me everything you want. But it's true, like it's so predominant in the system. So sometimes, and I don't want to be rigid. The name of the company is Flow because of that, right? So we want to be fluid on either direction. Sometimes their idea is an amazing idea, and I don't care whose idea it is. At the end of the day, it's, the Flow says in our mission, making a better world, right? So if it's making a better world, that's fine. So just to end on that, they get to pick one or the other of the options. So that's it, to answer the initial question before we move to the fourth step. They are listening throughout the whole process. They're listening to the images. They, by the way, they are communicating with the client since the contract is issued. I literally have a kickoff message. All of my messages are pre-written for most of these conditions. Welcome for all the time, blah, blah. So literally I change the name of who is going to be the person in charge of your project and the staff member supporting them. And it looks really cool when you're like, Ray Ramirez is going to be the lead designer, and Julio Gutierrez, director of design, is going to do a peer review, and that's all pre-written, right? So it feels really good, and they're already empowered. And then every email ends with what's next. It's what's next. So they always know next is scheduling our step one, and have you worked on step two? And there's a link at the bottom that says, do you know what a step one looks like? Do you know what a step two looks like? And they click on it, go to our YouTube channel, and we show what a step one and step two look like. So that they know what they're getting into. It's like, oh, that's how it looks. Okay.
That's brilliant to integrate that into the process. It's almost like its own sales funnel version of the design process.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Because our YouTube channel is monetized. So I want to send them always there. It's like the videos that I get the most clicks are those four-step process. Like, what's our four-step process? Like, well, I'm forcing them to have to watch them, Not everybody has time for this, but I complain when I deal with some really high-level CEOs and say, I don't have time to check all this stuff. And I'm like, you don't have time to plan how you want to live? This is your house. This is your okay.
It how is what important it is. Are you
I
to
guess.
Yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, I'll make the decision for you, but I will never be wrong. And then they select one or the other of the two options or minor tweaks. Throughout that whole dance, I'm evaluating that client as a, whether do I want to continue working with them? Do I like him? Do I, you know, all of us, we're looking at them and how the relationship has been. And I kind of continue to detach personally myself. You know, I'm like the MGM lion at the beginning of the show and at the end of the show. I come at the beginning selling the services, maybe walk into the step three meeting with the design and say hi, you're in good hands. If you have any code questions, call me. And then at the very end, I just hammer it down with an invoice. Here it is, you got to pay me. but it's good that I do that because then the staff members and the design team doesn't get involved in the finances. Like, they don't. It's a pre-written email that says, or office manager is going to follow up with an invoice. They don't. Because I don't want to get that bitter relationship. Like, the design part should always be fun. Like, the whole thing should be, it just be like, that was great. That was seamless. I loved it, you know. I'm always trying to look for the least bumpy ride, you know.
I really like that. And so how do you find the clients who are going to align with this process? Is it referrals? Is it marketing efforts? How do you even connect with them before you're able to onboard with them?
So now, I'm a geek, so I've always been working on search engine optimization and everything, like hashtags and everything, right? So I've been always working with that stuff. Now we do have a marketing director, thank God. I recommend everybody to get one, because although our vision is very, like, you know, that's why you have CEO and CFOs, right? Like, I'm vision-driven, mission-driven, right? So I give that to everyone, and then when they know what we're all about, which is something that gets redefined over time, then they are able to send the messages. So the way I break, Google has been awesome. So I would say that, right? Google, or presence in Google has been awesome because the old age architects that didn't care about media and social media and Google, like, it gave an opportunity to the younger generations to say, wait a minute, I can have a polished, I may not have 20 projects like you do, but I'll have three. And it will look better than yours. So then people, you know, so that gave an opportunity to us to generate that name that over time continues to get clicks. And we track those clicks over our Wix. We use Wix. Our Wix website and then our YouTube channel. So we get a lot of calls from there. The referrals, there's a lot of referrals too from clients to clients. So when we end our projects, it actually ends with kind of like a mini survey and also a mini here's our link to write a review. We haven't been enforcing that much, I'm going to have to tell everybody. But we have over 100 reviews, and I guess at that point you just don't care anymore. But we have all of that. So they, because I want to, that's a question I asked myself a while back. How can I still remain relevant in my clients' lives? Maybe it is, that's it. We just gave you this, and we're done. Maybe I drive by and I look at it and say, oh, look, it grew. It's a beautiful thing. But also, how do I remain relevant? There are clients that you really want to stay relevant for them. You know, maybe check in, maybe do an occupancy evaluation, maybe just generally. So we connect, we give all of our social media handles on that link and say, stay with us, refer us. If you send us a client, we'll give a discount to that client, like, you know, because good clients give birth to good clients, really. There's different profiles of clients. The hurry up, I need this tomorrow clients, right, that found us online and called 20 other architects. I smell those as soon as they call. There are others that do take their time. Now on our website, we have a Google form. It says work with us. We just added that little thing there. And that Google form, they fill it out. That always existed, but we put it on hold. It was all the way back in the pandemic. We were busy during the pandemic, like really busy. So we did a wait list, and that wait list people would put the information. I was like, if someone had the courage to sit down and fill out this form, they're serious about their project. Like, they're serious. Like, they're not wasting their time. So we always read those, like, you know, what's the timeline? What's the budget? What are you know? And then we immediately move that into or queue for emails to send out for initial consultation scheduling, and then we book them. So that's been, I'm training a lot of my clients. So think of this, too. Like attracts like. So we're very, very diverse here. So we have Mexico, Salvador, Venezuela, Dominican Republic, you know, Kenya. So there are a lot of immigrants. Right, they feel good with us. You know, the framers are Brazilians. The other, the Latino, they feel really good with us. But they're not highly, like educated into filling out forms and doing all of these things. Like the four-step process, we're actually kind of doing it for them. It's like, okay, listen, just text me the photo, all right? And I'll plug your phone right after. But, you know, text me the photo, we'll do that. So, because we have to meet everybody where they're at. You know, if you want to increase diversity, you can't just force everybody to do this four-step process exactly the same way. It's like, my grandma wouldn't do that, and she needs a new kitchen too, you know?
I appreciate you being candid about that, because a lot of times we think, oh no, if they don't fit my process, am I right for them? And so much of architecture is being able to market to serve. What problems are we solving for these people? And I appreciate how you're being open about how you're structuring the onboarding and how you structure your process to follow through with that value of diversity, both in your team and then in your clients.
Yeah, you learn a lot. In fact, I don't know, Katie, in your life probably, you've learned the most from the most difficult times.
It is so true.
In everything. Like, in those clients that have communication problems, that have, not just because they don't know, like, their root, it's not the language, it's just that they can't speak, right? Like, they don't know the language very well or something. And also the other ones that you have to say, I don't know if that's what you mean. Do you mean X, right? Like, so recalibrating the talk, you know. So you have to meet all of those halfway and more. And you learn how to be a flawless office to some degree. Because if you can deal with that, you can deal with all the other ones too, you know. You know, those are the ones I have learned the most from, all of those difficult clients, that they may be difficult clients. Then later on you learn, there's some that remain difficult over time though, but you learn a lot, like, okay, he's going to fight for the price, he's going to do this. I mean, come on, I already.
But you're calling out, sometimes sole practitioners will say, oh, every project's unique, I can't have a process because I'm doing every single one differently, but you're still relying on that process because that's your backbone, that's your spine. And by having that core with your team, you're able to swerve and adapt as needed.
If every project has its own process because the project itself is driving the process, one, you're going to run out of business because you're going to be wasting time over and over, all right? So you got to put time on the things that matter most. And, you know, I was working solo for quite some time. So it was – that's the reason why I created the process, right? It's like I need something that doesn't change in my life. Right? I'm going to need season conditions. I'm going to need this. I'm going to need that. Like, and then the designs can be anything. All of our buildings are different. All of them are different. So you could say, oh, that all of them are different. The sites are different. The projects are different. I wouldn't want to be repeating the same buildings over and over. That would be a disaster. So then you didn't learn from the previous one either. So it's an iteration, right? So it's like, it's so fun, but you have to have something that still remains your grounds. Like, you know, and I always tell everybody here, listen, we have clients that have never hired an architect because our fees are not really that crazy high. And we are affordable because we want to, again, increase diversity. It means showing them what an architect does. You know, most people don't even know. So you got to give them access to architecture so that they learn what architecture is, how you define it, because every firm may define it differently. So to me, you know, to us, it's community and diversity and, you know, and health. So that's it. If you are the one that, like, is inviting people into this show, you might as well know the show and the script for the show, right? Because they're going to feel lost. They don't know what's going on. If you don't know what's going on, then what's it's going to be crazy. So the fees are going to be burned. You're going to go over budget. You're going to have a lot of issues. So some things need to remain true, and you need to be the expert. Right? Like, if every project is different and explorationally different, and it's like, yes, but what did you learn from the previous one, and how can you guide them to the goal? Right? Like, how can you help them? You know, if you're discovering the process, which is fun, I mean, that theory of, like, discovering the building and the process as it goes, but it's kind of scary. I don't get on a car if I don't know where I'm going. It's not the building look. I'm just saying that there is a destination, you know? Yeah.
I appreciate that. Well, Darwin, one thing I've been doing with these flying solo interviews is kind of trying to understand if each person is a different bird. I feel like when you've described your story, it resonates with my own in going through firm after firm and just not feeling like I'm fitting in. And so Have you heard of the Ugly Duckling?
The Ugly Duckling? No, I'm going to Google
it's now. It's a Hans Christian Andersen story where a duck gives birth to many, many little ducks, and one of them is very ugly and born very late. And everyone in the farmyard teases that duck. And so finally that duck goes off because he can't stand it anymore. He's going to find his own way. And he goes through many trials in the original story, even getting frozen in a pond. But eventually, he makes it to a pond where he can have some peace and quiet on his own. And he sees swans fly down. And he says, oh, wow, those are the most beautiful creatures I've ever beheld. And he shies away from them. And they swim right up to him and say, wow, welcome, brother. Welcome to our pond. It's great to see you. And he looks down at the lake and sees that he himself is also a very handsome swan, that he's grown up into his own and kind of found his flow in life. And I think it's fun with flow that it's finding those strengths that everyone on your team has and really encouraging them and strengthening them to move forward with them. And so you're forging this path for your own flock of swans and ducklings and whatever else comes your way. And so that's really exciting to see. And I don't know if that's too weird, but...
No, it was perfect. Okay. Katie, okay. It was awesome. It was awesome. I got to get that book now. But it is true. It is true. I relate a lot with that story, and I relate a lot. It's a process of self-discovery, really, at the end of the day, right? What really matters to you. And we dabble around in life, right? We really, just like the duck was probably lost in stuff like that. We think we know, you know, you're a teenager, you think you know everything, or maybe you think you don't know anything. And then as you go through life, you're like, oh, wow. And the setbacks and the mistakes that you make, you know, literally mistakes, dummy little mistakes you make along the way, that then teach you, you refine it. It's like playing music. And then the work, it just looks beautiful. Sometimes I close my eyes and think that's where the flow comes from, of designing and being in a stage of pure joy, like happiness. So you're like, oh my gosh, it's happened. It happened one time me playing basketball where I could shoot in any way, and I will make every point. Any way. I was like, it doesn't happen all the time, but it was like, it doesn't matter what's going on, you know, or when you go on a date and just go perfect. You know, it's like things that just go perfect. You're like, most things in life don't go like this, but if I can replicate this, oh boy, this is good. You know, it's like, it's perfect.
You achieve that flow state and you
That's
can
right.
just exist in that moment and time sort of disappears. I think that's something that attracted me to architecture, and it's something that I try to find in any passion I have in life, is finding that connection.
I have to interview you, really. I'm so curious about you.
I'm just doing my little duckling thing over here. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. That's right.
Still hoping to look down and see a swan. We'll see.
Yeah, make sure just get the right mirror. You will see it.
Right. I like that.
Early in his career, Darwin didn't feel like he fit in with other firms. So he continued to migrate. If you don't fit in with one flock, try migrating. Try new waters. Architects and designers practice in many different ways. There could be a flock just for you out there. Or take flight by creating your own. There are three key components that define Darwin's firm, Flow Design. First, lead with empathy and empowerment. Darwin grew in different firms, and at each one, he reflected on what worked and what didn't. When he took flight with his own practice, he tried to include strong aspects of practice and integrate missing elements. He felt other firms didn't support his full potential, so as he built his own firm, he made sure he was encouraging and supporting his fellow swans to grow and thrive. He empowers each team member to spread their wings and lead their own projects. But the team isn't left to fly alone. They are one within a wedge, which brings us to our second point. Having strong systems. Darwin teaches his flock to balance a structured project process with the creativity and grace of custom design. So like a swan leading his flock, also called a wedge because of the shape swans take while they fly, side note, the leader of the wedge does the most work. The rest of the flock can fly in their drift, which reduces their efforts by 70%. 70%! So Darwin is using this concept to lead his firm with systems that reduce the headwinds for his project team. He creates systems that make project management 70% easier so his team members can focus on the best services and design for their projects. You can identify these systems in your own practice. Consider times that you find yourself explaining the same process to multiple clients. Flow developed a system for onboarding clients. Flow uses a series of YouTube videos to guide clients through their process. They break it down so that it teaches exactly what their clients need to know when they need to know it. It guides their clients through the design process without overwhelming them. Other architects may have a handout, a web page, or a hybrid proposal explaining each step of the design process. This high-level overview sets the expectations for clients who may have never worked with an architect before. These systems create natural checkpoints that the entire architecture team understands. It's much like the overnight pauses of a flock of swans during migration. Flocks usually travel the same path and they remember which lakes are deep enough to spend the night in. It's quite a sight standing along the shore of a lake when a flock of trumpeter swans descend at dusk. They fly down in a wedge formation until they touch down on the lake. But what then? At night, they can flow around the lake at their own pace. Which leads to our final point. To allow flow. Within the structured project process, each team member follows the flow design checkpoints to ensure the team is all on the same page. But between those checkpoints, the team member has the freedom to flow with the client. Like a swan chilling on the water. Once a checkpoint is reached, then the project team leader can meander and flow through the design process to deliver a satisfactory design solution. In this way, every project is unique, and the individual architects are empowered to design as they see best. Even as you build in systems into your own architectural practice, remember that each project is unique and needs some flexibility to flow. If you do this, you may also practice architecture as gracefully as a swan. This episode was brought to you in collaboration with Entree Architect, which is a fantastic community for finding like-minded entrepreneurs who are there to support you in your business journey. Please subscribe, share, and join the Flying Solo Movement community. We are just taking flight. Please join this journey for ongoing inspiration, support, and resources. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Katie Kangas. My hope is to encourage aspiring entrepreneurs and architects to soar to new heights and embrace the freedom of flying solo.